This is Michael Riversong, your host for the Tesla Academy podcast series. Today we're here with David Thompson, who has developed the Aether Physics Theory. And that theory is spelled A-E-T-H-E-R. It's basically a codification of the ancient belief that there is an aether that holds the entire universe together, so to speak. There are many ways, of course, to say this. And I think the most important thing at this time is to ask, David, what are the practical engineering implications of this theory?
Well, the ether physics model describes quantum structure, which is something that modern physics does not. So it offers a lot of insight into the actual structure of subatomic particles and even space-time itself. And where this really gets practical is in the development of technologies involving magnetic fields. Magnetic fields today are characterized by these really smooth, loopy curves that are produced with mathematical techniques, but in reality, the magnetic fields are spiraled. They're irregular, and so when people try to develop practical applications with magnetic fields that require precise engineering, the current system doesn't work out that well. But I'm hoping that the ether physics model will solve that problem.
We know that presently all electricity, of course, is generated from magnetic fields involved at some point, but I've noticed among electrical engineers, almost none of them can tell you anything about the nature of these magnetic fields and why we get electricity from a magnetic field.
Well, that's correct. The reason why that is because the ether has been written right out of science, and yet the ether, as it is in the ether physics model, is quantified as a quantum rotating magnetic field, so that the quantum of the magnetic field is the ether itself, and each quantum unit of rotating magnetic field joins together to produce the fabric of the ether, which is the fabric of space-time, as well as the fabric of magnetic fields, electric fields, and gravitational fields.
Perhaps we should pause to define the word quantum, because that's a word that gets so misused and is even used in marketing for bad purposes. And so let's have a definition of quantum.
A quantum is the smallest whole unit of a substance. That substance can be materials, so that your quantum material would be a proton or an electron, but also the quantum can be non-material, such as the ether unit. One electron exists in one quantum unit of ether. One proton exists in one quantum unit of ether. In order for speed of light to be what it is, a photon or an electron can only move one ether unit at a time, and the ether unit has a specific quantum length to it, which is the Compton wavelength, and a specific quantum frequency. The smallest length at the highest frequency gives us the speed of light.
And I assume that every student who's studying physics will run into this Compton wavelength as a quantity sooner or later.
Absolutely. In the latest discovery that we've made, the electron binding energy equation, it's imperative for this equation to work, and the electron binding energy equation is based on the constants of the ether physics model, and just by knowing how many electrons are in an atom, that's the only number we need, we can calculate the electron binding energy for the ground state electrons, which is an important predictive capability of this theory. The Compton wavelength then also applies to the electron structure, which happens to be a toroidal structure, and the surface area of that electron happens to be exactly the Compton wavelength squared.
That's really neat, because I don't think that's been very well explained in a lot of physics classes.
No, actually, in modern physics, the electron is considered to be a point particle and not having any surface area at all.
I think that may come, as a personal opinion, from our Euclidean biases in geometry. And, of course, those biases in themselves are all wrong, because Euclidean shapes, points, lines, and planes don't actually exist in the universe.
No, that's true, and that's why it's so hard to understand the magnetic fields in modern science, is because they're trying to force this preconceived idea of what a magnetic field should look like, as opposed to looking what it really does look like.
Yeah, that's an important point, and I think once we understand magnetic fields adequately, we're going to be able to do an awful lot of good engineering off of those. Theory always does precede engineering developments in most inventions. I shouldn't say always, but it usually does. And this theory, I think, provides a better foundation than anything else, which is why I came over here to talk with you.
Well, I just got back from two conferences. One is a conference out of Princeton University for investigating the paranormal and alternate theories. And I made a positive impression there with the electron binding energy equation. And also I attended the Cronia conference in Las Vegas and made a positive impression with the plasma physicists there. So there are people warming up to the theory and understanding its practical value that goes beyond the modern theory.
Good. Now, I understand you have this in a book form. How would people get the book?
Our website, www.16pi², that would be 16pi2.com. There are links to the book from there, but you can also get a overview of the book. We give an overview of the chapters right from the front page.
Good. And I understand it's also carried in the Tesla Tech catalog.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that's www.teslatech.info, and that's a very good website as well.
Yes, Steve Ellswick and Terry Brady have been very supportive of my work, and I appreciate it very much.
It's controversial. I've seen some of the controversy live on the internet, and that's okay, because anything that's worthwhile is going to have controversy. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite ancient sayings is, the way you know you're doing something right in this world is that you have enemies.
Well, I certainly have a fair share of those, but none of it is based on logic and reason, so it doesn't bother me at all.
That's good. In our second section of the interview, we'll discuss a little more how you came about getting this theory put together. So thank you very much, David.
Yeah, thank you.